Okay, you can go into the
Okay, I'm going to call the meeting to order for Harbor Pacific and Vista for March 12th, 2020. Could we all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Can I have a motion to approve the harbor minutes from February 12th?
So moved.
Second.
You need to abstain because you were not here. Okay, so you'll do that for me and then you can call for the vote.
I will abstain from the vote.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. May I have a motion for the Pacific minutes from February 13th?
So much.
Second.
I will abstain. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. May I have a motion to approve the Vista minutes from February 13th?
So moved.
Second. I will abstain. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. May I have a motion to approve Harbor's consent agenda?
So moved.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. May I have a motion to approve Pacific's consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. And may I have a motion to approve Vista's consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. And do we have any public comments?
So I don't have any public here in this room, and to my knowledge, we don't have any other sites. I have a chat going that would tell me, but if there is anybody on the line that would like to speak, please let me know. Okay, it doesn't sound like we have anybody, so those sites, if you'd like to, you are welcome to disconnect from the recording. If anybody does come to your site who would like to join the meeting, you would need to reconnect at that time. Thank you.
Okay, Kathleen, you are up for Harbor Superintendent Report.
Pretty much the same as we walked through. This report is a little out of date because we posted on Friday. Come on, goodness sakes. A long number of emails from all the health officials of every county that we serve. And so we have a little group of people that are working on ensuring safety and health and well-being of our students at our centers in light of all the health concerns related to COVID primarily, but also just general flu and cold season. So I sent a daily refreshment out today with an update. Last week I sent one out to parents as well. Initial one about, hand washing and things like that. And then this week it was a little more specific. Like, we have a lot of families who are wanting to just stay home.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. You can just stay home, and we are happy to support you in that. We know how to do that. There's a few hoops that they have to jump through if they are at our Vista location in La Fuente. If they are in Mosaic or if they are in Keys, then there's no issue. Obviously, homeschool learning center, no issue. They don't have to attend. We can make sure that they still get their work done at home, like we always do. And so we just need to make sure that we are have everything in, at the ready to avoid any lost days of school. The biggest issues at the moment are the closing of a lot of the events or activities because of the guidelines.
Yeah.
And so some certain events like this Get Real Con that you saw, the ILP Summit we've already moved to. The ILP Summit is only for the staff of the ILP programs, and keep in mind ILP is Venture Keys Homeschool. So those are our individualized learning programs, and they were all the staff were getting together for a meeting, and so now that's going to happen electronically. That's easy enough to do. It's not nearly as engaging, but it these people are getting paid to get the professional development and to participate, and that's the way it goes. And they can do with their jams on. So they don't like that and get their coffee whenever they want.
Yeah.
So, and the Get Real Con, we will probably, we have not made the firm decision to cancel, but I think that's probably what we're going to end up having to do. And so we will definitely try not to cancel, but reschedule, because we've got a lot of work into that, and we can try to find another date, another time that would work. So, wanted to tell you about Strive for 45. I don't know if you're aware that I did this little video. It was one of the Kick It with Kathleen episodes, but I did it about 6 weeks ago. And to urge all the kids to do Strive for 45, which means 45 minutes of iReady. You know, officially iReady asks you to do 45 minutes in each subject, English and math. But I just said you pick either one. And we have had a great response from that. We literally, every one of our programs has doubled their participation in iReady. Of the number of people who have met the 45. And I'm sure there is also increased of people who are under the 45 mark. And so, you know, that's working. We hope that that will help to get people a little more focused on the things that they need to learn before the CAS test. But we don't even know if the CAS test even happens, because quite frankly, we don't know what's going to happen with testing. You know, it could be suspension of the requirements, because like that's a, you know, on the other hand, the likelihood is low. Because the thing about, you know, here's the problem we're going to face is, and this is just off, just, we don't really know, but what I can say is our families are not going to want to come in to test. Mm-hmm. Not if this is still going in a month's time when we're, you know, when it's time to gather in a large venue with 100 kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And these are homeschool parents who, one of the big benefits of homeschooling, you know, your kid isn't going to get exposed to things, you know. So we're going to have, if we have to continue this way, we're going to have low testing rates with our homeschool populations. Our county populations are still there, but we're having 20% or so not coming to school. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're really looking at, not a financial impact, generally speaking. I would say, and I'm just saying across the network, I don't have the data for Vista or OTI I think you know, so it's just so sad, because I feel like we've done good work this year, and if we have low participation, that work will be will be minimized, because if we have low participation, our test scores won't count. If we get the participation, that if it's canceled or lifted because of the issue, then we won't have any things show that our work. But whatever. Leave everybody in the same boat.
So, which I'll say for Pacific, because it's a renewal near year next year, and they only gave us 3 years to begin with, it's NEU County House of Ed. We are actually petitioning them, as I discussed last time, in October specifically, so we can have a second year of data. So hopefully we can pass the test, but if we don't, I wanted to let this board know that that would be interesting. How San Diego County Elsa Ed is going to work with us on not having 2 years of testing data, because 1 year is not, as we all know, statistically significant nor comparable in the whole scheme of things. So anyways, we're keeping a close eye on it, but I wanted to add that in, Kathleen, sorry, just particularly for this board, because Pacific's data is so important, happens to be so important this spring because of renewal. But they'll have to work with us, just like they would with any other charter that they gave 3 years to, and this was their spring. We're not the only one in that boat, but it is an interesting little conundrum for this particular board, and we'll see how that ends up working out.
One of the benefits, though, of Pacific is that it is a small program.
Yeah.
We can wrap our arms around it. We can get, like, if we have a five-week window, we have time to get kids in different ways, you know, that are, and most of them are academy kids. So it's like, you're not going to, Pacific isn't going to have the problem that Harbor's going to have, for example. Harbor would be, I'm just thinking, we'll be lucky to have 50% participation, you know?
And the other thing, too, with homeschool is not only wanting to bring it in, but a lot of those students, because we go through this a lot, and again, because I'm in student records, there are a lot of the medically fragile children as it is anyway. So the parents aren't necessarily choosing to homeschool because of the politics, or they want their own curriculum or whatever. They're choosing to homeschool because of their child's actual health issues. So we are getting quite a few calls on that, like, does the ES need to come in, to even come into my home? Like, they're really, because they have medically fragile children. So no, of course they don't, and there's other ways to do it. But that's the interesting part, too, particularly just because Harper's all homeschool. I wanted to add that, because this board, again, has a lot of homeschool children. They are medically fragile, and some of them, and that's, then we're on a whole different road with talking to these parents about what we do.
Can any of that be handled electronically?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, testing is done electronically, but they won't allow the kids to do it at home.
Yeah.
So but on the other hand, like, we could,
that
maybe
could very easily change.
Mm-hmm. It seems like that could be something that they allow for. It might, you know, TBD. I'll keep you guys posted as things change. But I'm just letting you know, these are all things that we're wondering about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to make for an interesting year. But
yeah.
one of the things also is your principal is about Otay is about ready to give birth.
Yeah.
Have a baby.
Very very soon.
Right.
So she is going out on leave next week, and Philip Parks, the previous principal there, is going to come back a couple 3 days a week and support the new vice principal, because here's the thing that happened, is that the vice principal got a great job offer at her old school to be the principal of a startup charter. So the vice principal, who was relatively new to us, probably a year, I guess she was the vice principal ever since Phil Parks left, but he's been gone a year and a half at this point, right?
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
You're right. He's only gone since September. Okay, never mind.
Feels like a year
over time. Right. But anyway, so she had only been with us 6 months. Anyway, so the person that was selected, her name is Melissa McGuire.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry McGuire, kept thinking. And she was a teacher at Otay for a number of years, and she's excellent. But she had no experience with leadership, but she, other than leading a class of children, which she's really excellent at. You know, you get a lot of good leadership skills from leading a class of kids. And so, anyway, but, so we're hopeful. But, you know, there's nothing you can do that needs experience.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes weird situations happen, and that site is a large site, you know, so we definitely wanted to support that. Of an experienced principal who has been down those roads before, and can, you know, help her talk through it. And she do it, but he support her in doing it. So anyway, that's what's going on with Otay. Vistas is going along well. I'm the AIM, their mentor. I go monthly for the half of the day, and spend a lot of time with our new principals, both at Otay and at Vistas. So I spend a lot of time at those two locations. So just
we're getting a lot of fire.
You're getting, you know, your money's worth. So anyway, yeah. So, but it's good, you know. Like the last, so this year I'm at Pacific, I'm at Otay and Vista. Last year I was at Hammett and Eichon. So I was at Hammett and Eichon for 2 years. So we try to switch the AIM mentor every 2 years or so. And it's been a good process. Debbie, where are you?
I'm at San Jacinto and Santa Ana.
And Santa Ana, yeah. Wow. But you were previously at Bear River and at Murrieta, right?
Murrieta and, you know, I had Hammett Gerard.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, I mean,
I did do Bear River for a while,
didn't you? Yeah, you did. I remember that. But anyway, so it's just like we're just trying to, you know, because the thing is it takes a village. Mm-hmm. And everybody comes with a different group of skills. I'm not going to be the relate more original person. I'm not going to help them get better at relationships with their staff or whatever. I'm going to help them with instruction and, like, you know, what they've got to do out in the classroom. But everybody's got some different things. So it's matching up the right mentor according to the needs of that particular principal. So that's what we do with our leadership group, and it's worked really well. I think it's a good model for us.
How many years has that been in place?
We have a new principal for me, like, I'm good at instruction and vision. Those are my best areas. Like dealing with discipline, that's not me. Dealing with relationships. I mean, I deal with a lot.
How many years have we had that mentorship? How many years has that been on?
We've done it for like maybe 12 years.
Yeah, a long time.
Long time. Amy did it originally before she got to the
It has evolved.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It has evolved, and now I think it's more around what the goals and the initiatives are for the organization. So it's a much more targeted kind of mentoring. How are you doing on implementing this initiative or this goal or this strategy? So we get really targeted when we go out there.
It's just, you know, having somebody that's not your boss.
Right.
That is, well, I guess I'm everybody's boss in a way, but I'm not their actual direct boss. But anyway, you know, somebody else that has a different perspective. And so, questions about the report or anything else that you might, that was on the report?
The video thing is interesting too. So let's say there is a kid that, a number of kids, you said 20% of the kids across all the kids can't go to school. Are we offering them another option? Like can they switch to the online program?
Every academy program, all the teachers have a Canvas shell. And so every teacher has their lesson plans every week posted on the Canvas shell, and usually information for the parents and any kind of extra things that they want the kids to do. Often their home study, like, so your kids were at Eichon? Yeah, they have the one day a week where they are home, mm-hmm. Friday, I think. So they would have assignments for that Friday. Generally speaking, according to the grade, they would have it in the Canvas course. The problem is not all of our parents are using the Canvas at all. They're not getting on at all. In some of our, particularly our 5 day a week programs.
It's hard to navigate when you first.
Right.
It's not exactly the most user friendly.
It's according to how it's set up by the person that's doing it. Because some of our courses are absolutely beautiful. We have this course we set up for one of our specialists set up for a new reading fluency program we're doing, and it's designed for the teacher. And it looks like a tree, and then there's apples on the tree, and each one has a different. It's like, and so you click, it's a live link, and it takes you to lesson plans or, you know, schedule or, you know, whatever. So you have it all, and it's really nice. But you're right. It's on a case by case. Some of the teachers, especially the teachers of the 5-day and 4-day programs, are spending a lot of time. So this is what we've been asking the principals to do to get the teachers more polishing up their Canvas course, and then in addition get the parents on it and incentivize the parents to get on and really know how to get on, because if we had to close the schools tomorrow, the parents really need to know how to get on so that they can get their assignments delivered. Because we have all the curriculum, TK through 12, already available. We have all sorts of curriculum available. So it's not about not having the resources. It's really about people not knowing how to get on in some of our programs.
What about lecturing? Are those captured?
Okay, so we have a variety of tools where we can do live teaching. We can record teaching. But the live teaching, like a Google Meet sort of a thing, but we have Big Blue Button, and of course also Zoom and Google Meet. So those sorts of options are available through Canvas. So and they can be, Zoom can be recorded. I know Big Blue Button can be recorded.
But do we have like cloud storage? Are we paying for cloud storage, for example, to store those lectures so that they can
access it?
Mm-hmm. So they can, yeah.
Well, so I hear what you're saying, but I also, currently the teachers are not recording their lectures.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm just saying,
if that got to the point where they were doing that, then we could definitely do it. We have all the cloud storage.
Yeah, we have to have infrastructure here, right?
We have it already. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're doing cloud storage already. And we have, so for example, we have an entire math, we have lessons for every single math standard from grade 5 through grade 8 in small videos that our own staff have done. And these are not just somebody recording a lecture. They are actually produced and edited flipped classroom videos. So those could be delivered like that. Kinder through third grade or kinder through fourth grade, we don't have that much. We do have we have a lot more resources also. They're canned, they're not our internal, but they are from the companies that we get our math program from. And our history and science programs from, which has a lot of actual video things. So there's just a lot of options. In a way, it's going to be a learning curve, though, to get the teachers aware of what's available, and then make sure they're picking the right thing. It's a little deadly dull to watch somebody's lecture, and especially for the younger children, for everybody, but especially for the younger children. So, trying to figure out how to.
So for this month, also Kathleen, is the field trip still on?
Well, this is a moving target. We're getting new information every moment.
Mm-hmm.
But as of last night, when I was synthesizing all the information and writing the letter that went out today, they were saying any indoor event over 250 people or more, should be rethought, should be thought about. Now, today they just said no event over 250 people. I'm assuming it means an indoor event, but I don't know. But outdoor events, you're not in the kind of close proximity. So if you're going to Mammoth Park or something on
or
a field trip.
They said it was 6 feet between something like that, right?
Yeah.
I think that was the caveat.
So as long as you could be socially distant 6 feet, you're fine.
That was
so it's a huge venue.
That was from our amazing
I don't know. We're trying, you know, we don't want to go overboard and cancel everything, but we also don't
want to.
So the last thing CCSA needs is egg on their face for they bring the pandemic to our doorstep by holding the conference.
They
simply
wipe out
charters.
I have just one more comment. I saw your email about the certification for the homeschool kids. Brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's a great program. We're so real excited about it. I mean, we've always done it. We've done it for years, but we're like, we're trying to So here's the thing about our school. With all the years we've been in business, we have created so many things. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, we were talking about at our VHAC meeting for math a couple months ago, I'm like, you know, we're behind in this group, and we haven't written the whole list of things that we want people to do, like we've done with reading and blah, 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 blah. And then somebody was like, didn't you write something, like, for when we start a math path? I'm like, yes, I did. So where is that thing? So I look at it, I wrote a 12-page research-based, here are the 10 strategies we want our math, all of our teachers to do for math instruction. And it has, like, this is why, because we got it from these researchers, and this is what it looks like. And I was like, "Ooh, this never gone out in years." I'm gonna, you know, clean it up a little, put some clip art in there, and you know, turn it around. We've written it. It's like, but it's like you forget you even did it. That's the weird thing about this job. So anyway, and it's because we have so much. It's virtual storage. So if in your house. If your file cabinet, you can't close the door anymore because there's too many things in it, you clean out your file cabinet. It's just like we've got virtual files, and then it makes it hard to find the good stuff amongst the old stuff. Not that old stuff's always not good.
That one particularly was.
Well, I mean, that saved us a whole bunch of time. Plus, it reminded me for the reading one that we did, I didn't put any research basis. So then I thought, well, who cares about research? I care about research, but a lot of the teachers aren't going to care. They just want to know, what do you want me to do? But then on the other hand, some of them are going to want to know, why are we doing this? Because I don't believe in phonics or whatever. Okay, well, I can point out two research articles that are meta-analysis of research that says that it's valuable. So why not put it in there? So I'm gonna add research because I like to do that. And so it reminded me. But anyway, yeah, we're just trying to. As I was telling my instructional support team, it's like we've got to I don't want you to focus on writing new stuff right now. I want you to focus on repackaging and refreshing the stuff we've already created, and making sure people are using it and tracking who's using it and. If they're not using it, why aren't they using it? Because we think it's good, but maybe they don't know how to use it, or maybe, you know, whatever. So.
Yeah, there was mounds of data, start cataloging it, maybe.
Yeah.
Bringing it
well, like, for example, I was at several locations recently. The instructional support department has really delivered so many great tools to these teachers. One of them is every standard, they have a description page for the standard, and then they have a 6 levels of the standard. Like, what kinds of problems would you give a child that was at level 1 for the standard versus level 6 for the standard? And then it has, like, a little bit of other information on it. And then they made these cards for these. There's little flip cards on it with a ring. And so then I saw this stuff on the top shelf of several teachers' groups. And I was like, oh, you have the mastery binder. What do you do with that? Oh, when I need to, I refer to that. Like, when do you need to?
well, whatever I need to, which is never. So I'm like, well, what were you supposed to do with it? You know, I don't really know. And it's like, so sometimes we're giving them, and I'm thinking, being the business person too, you know, I'm thinking, how much did we spend on that binder? I'm kidding you, binder, you think it's free? It's not free. Okay, that binder alone is $20. All the print, color printing is, I mean, I'm sure it was a $100 binder. And then these flip cards are like beautiful, you know, glossy cardstock. And so I'm like, well, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking you should have this right by your side when you're lesson planning. You know, but I don't think anybody explained exactly what the expectation was. I think we always need to look at how we're packaging, because it's great information, but we need to package it in a way that is clear. Here's how you use this information. Because it's teacher information, not student information. So, sorry, I'm going on a third walk. But this is the difficulty of being in business for this many years. It's like, we have so much. We developed in the beginning, we had nothing. We were creating stuff. And then we have to sort of slow down and then sort of start like backing up a little to see what, anyway.
Yeah, do you find this for homeschool parents?
Oh, you know, that's interesting. I don't know if they ever went out to the homeschool parents. I know they went out to the homeschool ESs. But it would be a good thing for them.
Right, exactly. Because I think that is one of the things with homeschool is the parents are teaching the standard, but not to the level of rigor expected.
They think they've got the standard, but it's not. It's level one.
It's
of
right.
The,
yeah.
It's
the
hard
first teacher I talked to, she told me, I teach a sixth group the same material, but I teach a different way, like
right.
You were saying, yeah. Depends on the level of the student.
Right, right. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, well, so superintendent's report for Pacific, is there anything different or new?
Still kind of combined.
Okay, and then we're all set for Vista's superintendent report. So we will move on to information. Kelly Ouellette will report for Harbor, Pacific, and Vista the health services report.
Do you have the color document summit group? It breaks down the programs that we have initiated the last 4 years. The one that maybe people decided to see are the vision and hearing program. We've done contract to do the massive screening, well, massive, but where you go into the class and do class screenings is mandated by the state. Every 3 to 4 years, certain classes are supposed to get checked just to see how they're doing. So we do that, but we also twice a year go out and check the kids who have special needs, kids, IEPs, to make sure that that part of their IEP is taken care of. And the best part of the program is the follow-up, because unlike other school districts that I have worked for, they do give referrals when there's a fail. We follow-up, not just the written referral, but we recall to parents, make sure they get the referral, understand what it is, and then have access to getting the exam that they need to really find out what's wrong, And we're working on even going a step further and trying to find some way to get the free classes for those who just cannot. But this is unique, and we find the parents are very responsive and glad that we're following up. Because some have lost, we never got it, or I misplaced it, whatever. So we're actually really good about it. Kids that can't see have an opportunity to see, and I don't know how many of those, but kids who can't see have a lot kind of like gone down their visual capacity. It can happen so gradually they don't even know. And some just kind of grow up not quite seeing well, I guess worse and worse, and they don't really know. In fact, one child was put in special education just because they thought they had a learning disability, because they always figured out how to cheat the exam. He had a little, ABC, And when I got a hold of him, I think it was like third or fourth grade, and really having problems, and he felt so stupid. And his parents are from India, and they had really high expectations for all their children. And so I found out he'd been cheating. I think he's so smart, I figured out that, my gosh, this kid's almost blind. And he really cannot see.
Wow.
And so, of course, he couldn't read. He can't see the letters. So parents, you know, they took my referral and they came in. So I was invited to the IEP because the mother wanted to thank me. She started crying because she realized her kid, you know, this is what the problem was. So what happened was his reading level went up, whoop, like that, like in months. Right. He was like, huh, and then he was like exited out of special education at the end of the year because he really, his comprehension was there. You know, it was not a learning disability. He was like, couldn't see, but he was so smart, you know, that he himself didn't realize how bad it was. So that,
well,
that
the kids don't know.
No.
My son, when I was, I tell you, this is a bad mother story, but my son was in second grade. We went to give the physical, and my other son is in the fourth grade. My fourth grader goes up to read the letter chart. He's reading it, boom, boom, boom. Then he comes back about 10 feet behind the line with me, and my second grader goes up to read the letter chart, and he's reading C-R-F-T-Y with authority. They're all wrong. Okay, and so Bobby's like, Tommy, read them right. Read them right. And then it's like, with my jaw dropped, I was like, he can't read them. He needed glasses. And his teachers say he wandered around the class all the time because he would get up out of his seat and wander up to the board to see what was. So, you know, it's funny, but he didn't recognize it.
No,
right.
Because
children don't.
That's
what he did.
You just think everybody's like you.
Yeah.
You know.
I was losing my eyesight. I actually would love to have somebody. When I was younger, I started losing my eyesight. Not about eye surgery, but same kind of thing. I'm like, you don't realize it when you're a kid, right?
No.
You really don't. You're just like, why don't I understand what's going on?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
The numbers were really impressive. There was like 170 students that needed referrals for vision.
Yeah. But this isn't just from your school, but that's
from all of
right. That's a significant number. Yeah, we caught them.
And the color, was that related to color blindness?
There were some that were found to be colorblind. They need to let the computer in case that, you know, they think they're seeing the color, you know, following directions, and they're not seeing it because they can't discern red and green. There are different levels of that, but they need to know.
Yeah.
So, is there a criteria? Do you choose the students to be screened or just random?
Okay. Well, there's the mandated screening by class. So, right now, first, fourth, and eighth. Anyway, so next year it's just going to keep rotating. But the kids whose parents are concerned, they can make an appointment. We have a once-a-week clinic downstairs where I check kids. Parents can make an appointment anytime if they have a concern. The kids who have the ones who have IEPs, they all need the triennial and initial assessment, but it includes vision and hearing, and so we provide that for them. And that's either at the schools, that's twice a year at all the schools, so we want just for those kids. And then the parents at any time can make an appointment downstairs. And they get the full thing, talk to the parents, let them know exactly, and it's just great. So
very good.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any more questions for Kelly?
There's more happening, but that was kind of the one that we started with, and I think it's going really well. And then the one at the bottom about the EpiPens, we've used the EpiPens. They have saved lives, so we're very happy about that. And the fact that it's not costing Springs any money. We got the deal with the drug company who's giving us not two per nurse, but she's giving us 40.
Yes.
And one nurse, but 40, because they realize we need them. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all these cool things, just me. So they just started to do that.
The brand name.
Yeah, the brand name. So we know that we're getting exactly the dosage it says. I worked it out way back when.
That's
amazing. I was desperate because I didn't want one gift because I knew that the kids died from it. I mean, when they don't have it at the school at the right time. And in fact, one paramedic who's a parent in one of the schools I worked at, San Diego City School, said a kid died in his arms because at that time they needed a doctor's order, which they still do, to give it. They had just the regular epinephrine and just regular bottle. But he was like, wait for the doctor to call back. He had this little kindergartner, and the kids stop breathing. And I mean, he said, I want you to know that you need to have that in your school, you know. And that's before the law, like 10 years before the law. So, when it became a law, that was my mission, was to get every school, you know, for big kids and little kids, and we got it, and we still have it. Yeah, so.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah. No. Thank you, Kelly.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay. Moving on to VISTA's, Natalie, the California Department of Ed compliance requirements.
Yes. So our authorizer for VISTA, as you know, is the California Department of Ed, and every authorizer does their oversight differently. And one thing that the CDE wants for VISTA is to prove that we are compliant with all of these things. And those are the main your item. We already have been doing those things. It's not just because they sent us this list that we implemented them, that we are compliant with these things. So we just need to certify that these are being done. So today's action will just, for today's information item, will just prove that we've disclosed to the board that we are compliant with these things.
Okay. Wonderful, thank you. Okay, and is there anything different with Harbor's?
No, so only VISTA had that item.
Oh, okay.
So,
we're on VISTA,
which is Form 700, and I'm going to pass them back out. Okay, so Form 700, you guys are all familiar with it, and I started to pass them out today, and then I realized.
I got hands.
Yes, okay, well, actually, if you'll just hand that back to me. Because you guys represent three boards. Oh, sorry, and I probably didn't even look to what name I gave you. Let's see, Marlene, that's you. Can you move yours? Because you represent three boards, you do need to do three forms.
Awesome.
Typically, and so they've all been filled out for you, with the exception of the part at the bottom where you tell us if you have anything to claim or whatever. You usually do, right?
Yeah,
have things
got a couple
right. So I have the addendums if anybody needs to claim anything. If you don't have anything to claim, which is typical, you would check the box that says none. You would put the date on the line that says date, and then sign, and the date and the signature line. Pay attention to that, because they're a little bit backwards. And I would like to collect these forms from you, if possible, today. If not, certainly as soon as you could get them to me would be great. Yes, you check that box that says none.
Can I ask a question about loans? If you hold notes?
So
how large does that note have to be?
I don't know the details of that, and I did give you the link in the package that takes you directly to, you know, the official website. But what I will tell you is typically the only thing that we have to disclose are the things that could be considered a conflict with the school. So
okay.
I don't know how that would be, but I'm also not the authority on that.
Okay?
So you don't have to do that this minute if you don't want to. We can move on with the meeting, but if possible, I would like to collect these today, or if you need time to fill out your addendum.
Is there another page to put the
addendum? Yeah, I have a whole stack of addendums. I just don't know which ones you need. So how about if you
we'll
and I
talk after?
Yeah, we and I could chat after.
Okay. Okay, so you have given us specifics as well.
Yes, so
already.
The stack I gave you should have been all three boards. You should see right here on this line, this stuff, and hopefully we have all three schools. Yes, Pacific and Harbor. That's the only difference on all three boards.
Thank you.
You know, I'll talk after Jean, okay?
So we will pass by Pacifics and Vistas. We have completed the economic statements of interest. May I have a motion to approve the staff calendars for Harbor?
We'll move.
Okay, and Amy will lead in discussion.
Yes, so this is the approval of the 185 staff calendar and the student attendance calendar for next year. Administrative operations, which is my department, normally brings these forward 2 years at a time. However, we did make some changes that we want to do for next year, so we're only doing one calendar this time. The notable changes are that we would normally start on the 24th, which is a Monday, but we would like all staff to be done with their work schedule by the end of May instead of the first or second week in June. So what we are going to do is, instead of doing 3 weeks at Christmas, we are only going to do, over the holidays, we are only going to do two. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the parents gave us feedback that that third week was really difficult for them because they needed to find childcare. Mm-hmm. So the 2 week might be better for, we hope is better for the parents. The other thing is all the staff development days, which are the yellow on there, we supply 10 of those. So there's 175 school days plus 10 staff development days to make up the 185 calendar. We have front-loaded all those, and the education department, Vivian's side of the house, actually worked on these, and we put most of those at the beginning of the school year or before the school year started. And two of those are the Pechanga Ignite event. And then we do have one during the school year and two at the end of the school year for teachers to be able to check out and be completely done by that May 28th date. Spring break does fall the week before Easter, which we have always done traditionally. Our parents really appreciate that. And with all that said and done and putting fewer staff development days in the school year, we only have to start 2 days earlier than we normally would. So starting on Thursday the 20th and going Friday the 21st has also been something that we've received feedback that we really believe the teachers are going to like that because those first couple days are just getting the classroom get together, getting the kids the rules, all those things, and then on Mondays when they really can get down and start the content. So this is up for your approval. All three schools, all six schools across the network are the same, but all three schools are the same for you guys. Mm-hmm. So only one explanation across the board for that. Any questions for me? Yes.
I really like the changing the development day to before and after, because now it's once a month, right? It seems a little disruptive, so I like it. Changing it. One suggestion, is that possible to have 2 weeks of a spring break?
It would be, but the problem is so for the finance and business side of the house, having our teachers work a few days in June is actually an issue with threshold amounts to make them exempt employees. And so instead of giving another week off at spring break and having them bump into June, but then really once they check out and all that, we're to the end of June, they're really only getting a month off in the summer. And this way they'll truly get 2 months off in the summer because most come back around August 1st, especially the homeschool ESs. So what we tried to do is tighten it up during the school year so we could shove it this way so that they could really have a real summer off and keep their 185 more condensed.
From the parent perspective, when we have 2 weeks, we can take a short trip to somewhere. Now with 1 week,
yeah, and I think the academy parents don't want any time off because it's all child care expenses if they go 5 days a week. Mm. So while I agree with you, I think as far as things go, it's kind of back and forth on that. Is the homeschooled really like more time off during the year? And then, but on the flip side, the academy parents really want less time off, so we kind of cut it like in the middle to kind of compromise, so to speak. But that's good feedback, and we're going to see at the end of this school year, we're going to do formally or informally a survey to say, how did you like this plan? Mm-hmm. So again, that's why I didn't bring you 2 years of calendars this time, because we're going to see how this goes, get some feedback from the staff that work the 185 calendar, plus also, of course, the most important people, which are the parents and the students. And then maybe next year we'll figure out what happens. But we thought this would be nice, and certainly the teachers we've told are very happy because the other part with the Christmas are the longer breaks, and even like 6 years ago, we did the ski week in February. They're like the kids' learning gaps. They're just off too much. They're not getting like a consistent run at it. So we'll see how it goes.
So if they wanted an extra week, they can take that extra week. Didn't you say something about this last time? And if they tell the teacher like a week ahead, they can plan, and we still get our ABA.
Yes, absolutely.
So we should tell them that, right? If you're going to be gone, please tell us ahead of time because we need that funding.
Yeah, and your guys' programs in Vista, they would do what you basically do at a regular district school because Vista is seat-based. You do a little student agreement, get a 5-week work packet and turn it in, and we'd still get the ABA. Totally fine. And in all your other programs, they could just go for a week and get their work off of Canvas, absolutely. But you're right, we probably need to communicate that a little bit better so that the parents don't feel quite so locked in. But what we don't want them to do, except in cases like what's going on right now,
right.
We don't want them using classroom instruction all the time if they're in an academy. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because the classroom instruction
yeah, they're
is...
Yeah, like, I don't feel like going to school this week.
Yeah, and that... So, you know, you kind of got to be careful there. But very good point.
So now you will have a longer summer break, right?
Longer.
So
2 weeks longer.
One challenge would be the retention. That would take maybe a little longer for them when the school starts to get back on track where they learn.
Yep.
It's not really that much longer. It's not really that much. I mean, they still have the same exact number of days of school, and they still have the same exact number of vacation days.
It's just,
it's really a week.
Right.
It's really a week. And
the last 3 days of school, nothing happens that half week. So really, those 5 days are just pushed into the year.
Yeah, and the thing is that we were often paying for teachers to do extra days of professional development because we really need the professional development to happen before the school year starts because, you know, that's the time when, I mean, it's hard to get any kind of head of steam going with days off in the middle of the year. People have already started their year, and they're not, a lot of teachers, once they start something, they don't want to revise it, you know, which, you know, so anyway. So we like having the staff development up front.
And also, too, personalized learning is a difficult model. I mean, it's difficult to be a teacher in our school. It's a different way of thinking, you know, doing the small group instructions, making sure you're personalizing learning. And so teachers, particularly those that are new to us, need that extra staff development, that extra training, because it's not same as it was maybe as where they came from. So we'll see how this works out.
Mm-hmm.
And give me your feedback if you guys hear anything as we move through. And then we'll see how it goes. But I think we're pretty happy about it. Again, like I said, overall is really getting that development before the school year starts so they feel ready to go. And fewer days off here and there throughout the year.
Extra week added to the end of the year, added to summer, doesn't feel like that slide is going to be that much more, right? Mm-hmm. Versus if it was in the middle of the year or in the middle of instruction.
And if the parents aren't doing any instruction over summer, it doesn't matter if it's,
yeah,
you know, 6 weeks or 8 weeks,
exactly.
The slide's going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Amy.
Oh, you're welcome.
I will put this to vote for Harbor's 185 staff calendar. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. May I have a motion to approve the 185 staff calendar for Pacific?
Mm-hmm.
I will second. Discussion. There is no discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. And just the same for Vista. May I have a motion to approve the calendar for Vista?
Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Tanya will discuss may I have a motion to here's the second interim budget for Harbor.
Second.
Okay, Tanya.
All right, thank you very much. You have before you your second financial report for Harbor for the year. This is activity as of January 31st and then reforecast through the end of the year, which is June 30th. So on the second page, you can see right off the bat, we adjusted ADA down 11 from the first interim report that you approved in December. And you can see how it affects and impacts the revenue. Overall, a net revenue decrease of $86,000 and change. Salaries were adjusted accordingly. Benefits were a little bit higher. That's just due. We never really know what the full benefit participation would be, and so we've adjusted it accordingly. Your services and operations are up slightly, and again, that's due to special education, additional contracts that we brought forward at the last meeting. Overall, you'll see that Harbor is negative $58,000. There's really nothing to be concerned about. If you look below and you see where their fund balance is at $1.6 million, that's 60.87%, and that's because that was including all of the fund balance, any fund balance that occurred when it was a single charter, people that split. and it doesn't bode well in our interests when we go forward with our SB 740 renewal funding determination to have that large of a balance. So this is strategic in nature. And I've just gone through and explained some more details regarding that and what that means. Again, obviously at 60% reserve, you're far above the standard that's required. You're good. And your next financial report will be in May when I bring forward for you the assumptions that we're using to build the budget for the year 2021. Are there any questions that I can answer for you? I tried to spell out all the acronyms for you. Mm-hmm. And tried to make sure I said them to you.
Okay, thank you, Tanya.
You're welcome.
We'll have a vote on Harbor's second interim budget. All in favor?
Aye.
Mm-hmm. Any opposed? Motion carries. And may I have a motion to approve the second interim budget for Pacific?
Second.
Okay, and this is the same report, but for Pacific, and you can see we were just down 688. Amy and her team did a great job forecasting that or where we would land and adjusting the revenues accordingly. You will see we are intentionally deficit spending $485,000, and let me explain to you why. When we have a brand new charter, we have to bring forward and go to the state for the funding determination. When there's a 10% or a $1.3 million ending fund balance, the state gets a little worked up about that. So we're purposely spending it down, and even with that negative spending, you can see we're still in a 10% range. So that's a healthy range for us to be at. So it's intentional and purposeful, and it should be a one-time event. Any questions I can answer?
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. May I have a motion to approve VISTA's second interim budget?
Okay. VISTA, little baby VISTA. we were down 12 students over what we initially projected in December. That's a $117,000 impact to the local control funding formula. So VISTA and our amazing accounting staff did a great job of curtailing every revenue where we could, saving money where we could, working with the principal down there. She's fantastic. And ultimately, again, service and operations are up slightly, and that's because we had some shifts in our special education funding down there. So even with that, all of those adjustments, we ended up being able to bring down to the bottom line $26,000 more than we had anticipated at first interim. That's really important because you can see the numbers are significantly smaller with VISTA. So you have one unplanned event, and that can wipe away any gains that you have. So it's really critical. Day by day, expense by expense, we're turning her hair gray, but she's doing a fantastic job.
Yes.
And so are there any questions I can answer about VISTA? They're healthy and they're continuing on.
Okay. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. May I have a motion to approve the auditor selection for Harbor?
Okay. Every year we have to bring this forward to you, and today your controller for all three schools, Brenda Benson, is going to present again to you.
Hello, everyone. All public schools bring this forward every year, and it's due by March 31st. So today, after this is approved, we will be sending this approval for our selection of CWDL to our authorizer and then to the county. And we chose CWDL again. We were very pleased with their work last year. Their fee schedule is remaining the same at $7,090. And they're very familiar with charter schools. So I don't know, do you have any questions for us?
Sounds like a good fit.
Fabulous.
Okay. I'm all in favor of approval of the auditor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. And may I have a motion to approve the auditor for Pacific?
I'll move.
Second. And is it the same auditor for
Pacific? And also the same fee schedule.
Okay. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. And I will. Can I have a motion to approve the auditor selection for VISTA?
So moved.
So moved.
And second. And the discussion, there is no discussion. All in favor?
Mm-hmm.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
And let me just say that these contracts, again, this is important how we look at every single thing. We're saving about $5,000 per audit per school. Mm-hmm. So it matters when you're looking at a small school with numbers.
So you're saving $7,000, you're only paying $7,000?
You're only paying $7,000.
We were paying $12,000,
nice.
And now we're only paying
$7,000. Wow.
And we're getting a superior audit.
Good work, mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
They're also doing the tax return.
It
wow.
Helps that I knew them before, but you know, we'll take one.
They've been very helpful because the larger part of audit certainly is the finance side, but they also audit the student record side, which is why I'm saying they're fabulous. They check for our P1 or for our P2 numbers, all sorts of things across the board on our side. And they're one of the reasons that we could go paperless with student agreements and do these things, because they weren't just like same as it ever was. They researched it, they called, they asked, they did all these things to try to get us to move forward. And so it is one of those things that, you know, just to chime in that it changed everything, because all 10,000 of our students could do something different that we couldn't do prior. And it's completely legal. We just needed somebody to do the work as the external auditor, because me saying it was okay isn't good enough. It has to be an external auditor to do these things. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so it's fabulous.
I saved us a ton of money and overhead and paper.
So much.
Mm-hmm. So did you save $5,000 or $7,000? Who knows, right?
Oh, yeah. Probably more than that, because just the time that it takes in coordinating an audit and going through that, I mean, my time alone and including Amy's and her staff, and just the process that we can refine is so much better.
That's great.
Okay, we've already taken the vote for VISTA, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
May I have a motion to approve the superintendent succession plan for Harbor?
So moved.
Okay, discussion, Debbie?
Okay, so before you, cabinet members, your assistant superintendents and superintendent have been talking about the succession plan and thought that we really needed to put a little bit more specifics to it, so it was really clear not only for our boards but for our staff that in the event of Kathleen's absence, either temporarily or long term, that we really did have a more specific plan in place. So that's the reason this is being brought to you today. Really clearly spelled out what the responsibilities would be of the temporary appointee and how long the duration of temporary and long-term and compensations, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So any questions about it for me?
No? Okay, we'll take a vote on that. All in favor?
Mm-hmm.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Debbie. May I have a motion for the superintendent's succession plan for Pacific?
I'll move.
And is the discussion any different for Pacific? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. And may I have a motion for the superintendent's succession plan for VISTA?
So moved.
Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. May I have an approval, a motion for the infectious diseases for Harbor board policy?
Mm-hmm.
And second?
Who was my second?
When?
Okay, do it first or second for you? I didn't hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and who was my second?
Second.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much.
Debbie.
Okay, so as things have been sort of progressing with the coronavirus, we started looking at our policies and what we're actually doing in the school and wanted to update those. And in that process, we noticed that the board policy really needs to be significantly updated to match the current situation and laws. So before you have the board policy changes that are more current, and also there's a couple of pages there that talk about what we're actually been doing here at Springs every day. This is our status quo
the way we look out for the health and well-being of all of our kids through our facilities department, through our trainings, through our school nurse programs. So we felt like we wanted to update the board on that. And like Kathleen said, this is old news from about a week ago. Rapidly. This seems really almost very basic when you think about where we are today. So that's what this piece is about.
So what were the bigger changes that needed to be updated in the policy compared to our old one?
Really very little. There was nothing in the policy in regards to one of the issues that was not in there is this is infectious diseases and health-related school closures.
Mm-hmm.
So making sure that we all understood as a non-classroom-based charter school that we don't have to mandate a school closure, that we can actually allow families to self-care, to remain at home on our home study program. So some of those specifics related to the type of school we are, we wanted to put those out there in a board policy so we all know the school closure would be something that the health department would mandate, but that currently we have a lot of students and families who are electing to do home study from one of our programs, and that's perfectly fine with us as well. That is not a school closure in this. Our families can do that any day of the week. So it was that kind of language about what would precipitate school closures and the fact that we are non-classroom based, and so we can do things a little differently than comprehensive school.
Very good.
Can I ask a really dumb question? Just because I don't
know. Nothing dumb about this.
Nothing dumb.
So let's say that we did have to shut down one of our schools that is paid per seat and being attended, right?
So that would be Vista for you guys.
Vista.
The Vista Student
okay.
Center.
So I don't know if we're on Vista or not. We are on Vista, right? Yes.
We're on Harvard.
Yeah. So let's say we had to, for some crazy reason, shut down Vista.
Yes.
For an extended period of time. We're not getting that revenue.
So kind of. We will get the revenue, but and Tanya, help me out with this from the auditor side, but there's two things we can do in that case. Is the first thing we can do is get all students to sign a student agreement. So if you're with a regular district and you're like, I'm going to Hawaii for a week, we were talking about this earlier, you go sign a student agreement like you guys do for everything else. Vista doesn't do the student agreements like y'all do in iShine.
Mm-hmm.
So they do that specifically for the 2 weeks we're closed, or 3 weeks or whatever, and get a packet of work and then return it. We'd still get ADA for that. The other way to do it is if it was a closure where something like that couldn't happen, let's say everybody's quarantined in their home and we couldn't get that together, then my understanding is, and again, Tanya might know more about this than I do, is there's going to be special waivers through the state where you get paid your ADA because it was, like, outside of your control. And that's called
it's a J something or other form. What it is the state will mandate an emergency, which it already has, which makes this eligible
now.
So what happens is whenever we fill it out, there is no timeline to do that. We get it to the county office of ed, they review it, and they send it on to the state so that you actually do receive what your average ADA would have been historically over that time period. That's what you receive.
Which for you guys is about 90.5%. Is your average daily attendance versus how many students should be in the seat. So you guys Vista's actually doing a really good job. But you're absolutely correct in those other programs, just because we've been telling you this so much, Debbie's absolutely correct. For any of the, like OTI, for that program, they already did student agreements and everything. So they can do all their work from home now. School closed or open, it's already set up legally for us to be able to claim ADA because that's a progress non-classroom-based school. So you guys just have that caveat of Vista. And then just as a side note, we have one other school, which is in Citrus. Our Santa Ana location is also the same as Vista. So we have two of those that we have to set up in that way. But it can be done. So I think at the end of the day, either of those would end up working.
Can we preemptively do that?
No, because you have to have it. You have to recognize what your potential loss is.
Okay. Yeah, because my concern would be, and it sounds like this isn't a concern, it would be that we have to continue paying the staff. We can't say, sorry, we can't make payroll this month, right?
No, we
can't really do that.
Right, yeah.
So,
they get paid.
Yeah, but that would be okay because of this emergency thing that you're saying we wouldn't have that issue?
Well, right. I mean, they would get paid either by their sick time or vacation time, whatever they earn, because they're not actual performance services, but if it was an actual closure, that's what we would do. Now, if we were still facilitating independent study agreements, as Amy said, then staff would still be working.
They'd still be working, either for parent calls, help students online, or whatever we needed to do.
So there's a variety of plans that we have in place to address those situations, whichever level they occur.
Could we force them to take their sick time? Can we do that?
People can either take their sick time or they can remain unpaid. They have options. It's in the life of sick time.
Yeah, so I didn't know how that worked, or if we had to continue to pay them and not take their sick time because we're the ones shutting down the school and not.
Doug can probably help us.
So it's different for hourly employees versus exempt. So hourly employees, if they ran out of sick, if they didn't have enough, let's say it was an extended period of time, so they wouldn't actually have anything that would cause them to really get paid. For exempt employees, it's a little bit different. In terms of having sick and vacation time, which most of our exempts don't have vacation time, but in that situation, if exempt employees are out of time, you would still have to pay them if they worked a day, at least a day during that week. So it's very interesting the way the law works.
But we would want to pay them at the same time, too, because we want to keep those.
Absolutely.
We want to keep those people that we work so hard to bring in, right? So that's the whole point. We don't want that turnover during something that's out of our control. So if at all possible, we can continue to get funded and continue to pay them,
mm-hmm.
that would be the best case scenario, right, for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We want to keep.
Because the public schools are probably still going to pay, right? Regardless, I doubt they're not going to pay.
Well, they're bound under government code and ed code. It's a little different than
that. I don't think it's the same. Yeah.
And collective bargaining agreements. But that's never addressed COVID.
No.
So it's a very strange thing, but it will in the future, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Infectious disease will become a part of
part-time
staff don't I can't imagine the part-time staff would be continuing to pay. Because I know the colleges are different from K-12 public education, but all the lab teachers, what we had heard is all lab teachers were getting just cut. There's until it's back on, those people get nothing.
Thanks.
So
yeah. The other thing is
you can't take ceramics.
Oddly enough, even our temps and subs, because of our position under the law, we are under the normal wage and hour laws, and then there's California sick law. They actually accrue sick time, even as a temp or a sub, which is also very interesting because in order to use it, they actually have to be scheduled to work. So they'd have to say, yes, I'll take that job, and they have to say, but I'm calling off sick, so I can use my sick time. But in this case, they could actually use their sick time. They have limits or caps in which they can accrue and roll over. It's 48 hours. So they would have even some time in a situation that they could actually try to, pursue, I guess you could say. But it's kind of weird. I think this is where we would want to try to figure out, well, where can we be flexible? If we should be flexible as much as we can, that is kind of the recommendation, is trying to do what you can in this situation, since it's so unique. So we would do what we think is in the best interest of all parties involved, and so we would try to do what we could for our employees, but there's always going to be some limits.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a question for Danny. Are we providing, hand sanitizers or tissues for our classrooms?
Yes.
Same teachers asking for donations. Is that standard to provide for them? Or?
We are providing all of that at all of our sites and all of our locations, yes. We stocked up on all that. It's difficult to actually to go out and buy it and donate it at the site. So, we had already begun getting those materials to the sites and talking to them about some of these things, about educating kids and hand washing and
Sanitizer would be more efficient, especially for little kids.
I think the thing with hand sanitizer is that some kids can't use it.
And so we are making sure that the soap and water.
Well, the truth is that soap and water, what I heard from all the reading I've been doing, not yes. an honorary, is not really. But yeah, the soap and water is actually better than the hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
It actually gets you cleaner. But so.
And that amount of time, you know, they have that. So I was sharing that my own granddaughter came to my house the other day and taught me how to wash my hands the way Miss Misty told her how to do it. And I
showed
all and it took the long time and this and this and you got to do this and whatever.
Very good.
And so I'm educated on that as well. But I mean that is it's about the amount of time to
happy birthday
to wash my hands.
Right? Yes, twice.
So that is our go-to washing after from, and then making sure soap and water, all the pulmonary areas and things. And
about 3 times
longer
than I think
you
use hand sanitizer. Well, I heard some of the teachers told me that they, not necessarily our teachers at our school, but teachers in general are running out of the antibacterial soap, and
everybody everywhere is ready.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So they're asking for donations from parents.
No toilet paper
either. I will tell you that in general, our supplier, we have always purchased hydrogen peroxide wipes, Lysol wipes, and hand sanitizer, and paper towels, and toilet paper, all those things from our general supplier. And so they will keep going the orders. They're not taking new orders because they're like, we are going to have a limited amount of supplies, so we can't take any new orders. Mm-hmm. But we're going to keep you stocked with what you already were getting, which we already were getting those things. Tissue boxes, I'm pretty sure we get, but one of the things that we're recommending is having more tissue boxes in the classrooms. So that is something that might be useful to donate, you know, so they could have, so it could be closer at hand if somebody is going to sneeze or cough.
Fundraiser, we make our own hand sanitizer and sell it to the public.
It's true. Yeah,
the sanitizer and the tissues in the regular public schools.
Yeah.
They you don't need.
So people are using it.
I heard something
exactly. The CDC released an actual
recipe
to give out to people because there is a. I have a friend who made $1 million selling hand sanitizer on Amazon.
Okay, so let's take a vote to approve the infectious disease board policy for Harbor. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. May I have a motion to approve the infectious disease board policy for Pacific?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, and all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. May I have a motion to approve the infectious disease board policy for VISTA?
Move.
Second.
And vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. May I have a motion to approve the credential waiver for special ed Olivia Fernandez for VISTA?
Move. Second.
And Doug.
Okay.
Need a discussion.
So waivers aren't, you know, abnormal. And so in this particular case, you know, SPED teachers are highly coveted. They're hard to come by. Mm-hmm. And so it's been one of our harder positions to keep filled. Although there are others that are harder. Mm-hmm. Our speech and language therapists are the hardest, actually. But generally speaking, you know, the big thing, and I just had a really interesting tool that was sent over to me by email. It was an interactive map for the whole state of California that shows all the areas, all the different districts where there are shortages of teachers that are credentialed. So it's a very interesting map because the darker the space basically means the less credentialed teachers they have and that they're missing credentialed teachers, right? So things like this have been put in place to basically help with these kinds of situations. And so Luckily, you know, Olivia is actually one of our employees that's been with us for a very long time. She served in a support staff role, and now she's shifting over to a credential role. That's her path that she's on. So this is, like I said, a typical thing. So this is required. The board approval is required for her application for everything to be able to move forward. So it's one of the pieces of the puzzle that have to be in place for it to happen. And, you know, we have waivers that happen often, but it's not always required for the board to approve. In this case, it is. So that's why I speak for you today.
She's not credentialed.
She's in the process of getting her credential. Okay. And so she's moved in the process far enough that she can use this waiver and start teaching. Mm-hmm. So it's not a full credential yet, but she's, like, really close to getting it done. So this is kind of the bridging for these kinds of situations where it allows them to step in and actually start to teach.
And there's no legal ramifications for that, right?
This is normal.
It's normal?
Very normal, yes.
And Olivia's been with us. I hired her, like, 15 years ago in assessment, and she's also bilingual, which is perfect for Vista.
Yeah.
So she's been... I'm really happy that she's really made a credential role. She's
well, she was part of our program for getting our support staff to be teachers, the program that was through Riverside County Office of Ed, and she got money, funding, and mentorship here in order to help her get through her credentialing program. So we definitely wanted to make sure we gave her this opportunity, you know. So it's important. We are also working on a plan to help our ACEs get credentialed that want our ACEs who have bachelor's degrees who want to get credentialed. We have 25 that want to get a multiple subject credential. And so we are working with Eastern Oregon University, and they are going to allow us to modify the content of the courses up to a certain percentage of each course so that we could really put a personalized learning bent into it, how to manage a personalized learning classroom, all the things that we spend the first year or two that a teacher is with us, training them on how to do. And so we aren't paying for it, but we have people who are good at getting money and grants and things and finding people ways that they can get discounted tuition and all that, yeah, because it's going to cost $20,000 for them to go through this program, but they can get $17,000 of it paid by this one, what's it called? It's America Teach for America. It's not really Teach for America, but it's something, sounds kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to agree to teach in a Title I school for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we are one, and so they can teach for us, or they can teach for any other school district. So, anyway,
so
we're excited about we're planning to pilot the first cohort of people in the fall, maybe as early as June. Our own staff will teach some of the classes. Some of the classes will be taught by the Eastern Oregon University people. And they will, in the end, they'll have a master's degree in teaching, a bachelor's from Oregon, a certificate from Oregon, and a California credential, assuming they take all the tests. Right. California's have got more rigorous demands than other states.
So this is for ACEs, you said?
ACEs.
So ACEs that can't normally teach will be able to teach when they're done?
Well, right. When they're done with that, they will not have it. It won't be like Olivia. Olivia's an intern.
Mm-hmm.
These folks will actually will spend the year taking these classes. They will be in the classroom as an ACE originally, and then they'll move into the student teaching portion, and they'll be doing more teaching, taking over more of the teaching. And when they're done, they will actually have a credential. They will have their preliminary credential.
Yes.
And so it is a really great program. And we may not be able to use all 25 in a teaching capacity the following year, but they can go, they can go out and get a job or stay with us and be a substitute or, a lot of variety of things.
And that's the reason why at the Pechanga events, everybody was up on the stage getting their 15 and 20
yeah, yeah.
year zero churn, right? From it's because of things like that. So
well, right? We believe that it's a win-win. Mm-hmm. We win from it, but also the staff wins, and we do have a lot of turnover in the ACE positions, and that's because it is like not a full-time job. It's 185 days generally, and 7 hours a day or whatever. It's not like a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And but if they're more likely to stay with us if they could be part of a program like this. Because they have to work for us for a year before they're eligible, because they waive the part of the credential that requires observation and field work hours. So,
because
they've been in the classroom as an ACE, so they've already, you know.
And they're getting paid.
And they're getting paid the whole time, right? That most student teachers have to take one of the reasons why people don't get their teaching credential is that they have to take at least 3 months off to student teach, almost more like 4.5 months. Because and you know, if that's a hardship for most people, it's horrible. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. We will take a vote for the approval of the waiver for our ES, Olivia Fernandez, for VISTA. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Moving on, do we have any board comments or future agenda items?
We can be scared of this.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I didn't hear anything about that.
What was the question?
The CCSA goes to just reschedule.
They are doing they're doing some of their sessions online. The ones that they feel are like everybody's like eager to have, like 15:05. So anyway, but yeah, no, they're scheduling.
When will we know about it?
We are saving $20,000. Just FYI.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
now got every time that she
costs,
yeah,
Pam
Ransom.
I know. Well, she, you know, we luckily they canceled it enough time that we didn't, you know, all the costs of the food and the travel and the hotel, mm-hmm. that adds up.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so. I'm not too sad
though about canceling. I think everything. I think
it's
great. I mean, if they're closing Disneyland,
yeah.
When will we know about Disneyland? Is it real time? If it's
we're
left the conference.
As we were speaking, incoming news. Maureen has found out that she can cancel the buses with no cost at this point. Because we had 6 buses scheduled for the Get Real Con. And then we also, the Grove is only going to cost us $50 to back out of at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So
with the church, they should be.
I know they should give us $50, but whatever, I don't complain about that. And then Holly's going to have to organize so that she doesn't get the food order because she was getting, we were going to provide them lunch from the lunch program. And so, so we'll postpone until September.
So it's decided.
Perfect.
That's decided.
So I remember, Carl.
We're just it's too close to 250. And then what if tomorrow they say 200?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's
well,
like.
LA is
LA
down to 50.
It's
LA is
right. So that's why, unfortunately, yeah. So. Sorry.
Okay. I will take a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you for anyone who's still on our line. We are adjourned at 6:01. Thank you.